do right and wrong change over time or with culture? The world seems to think so. But what does God say? Let's talk about it. There was a man who checked into the hospital on one occasion, and he was having surgery, and it was a pretty simple surgery, but he was still angry about it and quite anxious about it. The bottom line is, this man was not a very nice person. As my grandmother would say, he was downright ornery, and no one liked to be around him. I mean, even his own family had a hard time being around him, but doctors and nurses would avoid him like the plague. Well, he came through his surgery and did just fine. The doctor said he would. Everything was okay. But as he was waking up from his surgery, he noticed that someone had closed the blinds on his window, and he didn't want the blinds on his window closed. So he rang for the nurse, and in came running this Fried Hardeman graduate from the nursing school, who was his nurse. And he barked at her and said, "Who told you to close the blinds on my window? I didn't want those blinds closed. I want those blinds opened right now, and I don't want them ever closed unless I tell you to close them. Do you understand?" I'm telling you, he was mean. He was just a mean person. She smiled and looked at him and said, "Yes, sir. But next door, there's a vacant lot, and they're burning a lot of trash. We didn't want you to wake up from the surgery, look out that window, and think for some reason the surgery had failed." That was her kind way of saying, "You're a mean man. And if you don't straighten up, you're going to go to the bad place." You see, she had a moral compass. He did not. Whatever happened to America's moral compass? You know, it used to be homosexuality. Now it's an alternate lifestyle. It used to be abortion. Now it's a women's fertility rights or body rights or what's the language? Reproductive rights. It used to be that God made them male and female. Now it's pronouns and gender identity. And it used to be corruption was corruption and embezzlement was embezzlement and a lie was a lie. Today, it's mistakes were made. Whatever happened to our moral compass? We're not the first people to ever have difficulty telling the difference between right and wrong. In the days of Isaiah, the prophet, he told Israel, God's people, in Isaiah 5, verse 20, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitterness for sweet and sweet for bitter." You see, they had lost their way, and they had somehow lost their moral compass. We live in a society today in the midst of a culture that's been described as postmodern. And what that simply means is there are no absolutes. But stop and think about that. Is that not an absolute? There are no absolutes. That is an absolute. It's an oxymoron. But that's the world we live in. It's so confusing. And so truth is relative. And truth for me may not be truth for you. Your truth may not be my truth. But I have no right to judge you. And what you feel is your feelings. And they're right. And I have no reason or right to judge those or to condemn you for them. And the same with my feelings. You can't step on my toes either. They're my feelings, and that's my truth, and that's where we stand. It used to be that the verse you heard most often in our world was John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believed in him should not perish but have everlasting life." That's the universal message of the Bible. But today, America's favorite verse is Matthew 7, verse 1. "Judge not, that you be not judged." That's where we are. And so to many in our society, right and wrong do change over time and will change with culture, and so should the church. And so many people rationalize what they're doing in their personal lives or in their spiritual lives by simply saying, well, that's what they did then, but that's not necessarily what we have to do now. I know that's what they called it then, but this is what we're going to call it today. And so their justification for their lifestyle or for where they attend services is simply right and wrong do change over time, and right and wrong do change with culture. But is that true? I'm here this afternoon to tell you it's not. That there are absolutes, that there are intrinsic laws, and to God, right and wrong don't change. They never have. And so this afternoon, briefly, from Matthew 19, I'd like to make that observation. This is not meant to be an in-depth study of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. That's not my intention at all. Rather, my intention is to show through this passage how God created marriage from the beginning and how that has not changed. And what God said was right and wrong from the beginning is still right and wrong today. So think with me about four different cultures, if you will, four different worlds that are given in this one passage. First of all, think about the world of the Jews in Jesus' time. And it's laid out for us in those first three verses of Matthew 19. When the Pharisees come to Jesus and they test him. And they're testing him by asking him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? Now what they're asking is, can I divorce my wife for just any reason and marry someone else if I love that person? If I've fallen out of love with my first wife, may I divorce her and marry someone else that I choose? That's their question. But they're there to test Jesus. This is not an honest inquiry. They're trying to trap him. They're trying to trick him, for him to stumble. They push Jesus, thrust Jesus into the midst of a rabbinical debate in their day and time. This was a cultural war that was going on in their time regarding marriage, divorce, and remarriage. There were basically two rabbinical camps. There was Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai. And Rabbi Hillel believed that a man could divorce his wife for any reason and marry another. But Shammai believed differently. He believed, and his rabbis, his followers, also believed that the only reason a man could divorce his wife and marry another was for uncleanness. Well, those are the lines that were drawn. If you've watched The Chosen, if you've watched that series, and this is not a promotion for that, we've watched it. It is better than regular TV. At least it's decent. But if you've watched The Chosen, it's very provocative in some ways. But the truth is, the point I'm trying to make is that in The Chosen, you'll hear those names, Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai, and their different views. And what they're trying to do with Jesus is, they're trying to put him in the middle of that debate. And so it's like, Jesus, here's what our preachers say. Which preacher do you side with? Where do you come down on these issues? And understand where they put Jesus. He is in an impossible situation. If he sides with Hillel, he's too liberal. If he sides with Shammai, he's too legalistic. He can't win. He understands that. But he's not going to get into that fray. He knows better than that. It is ironic when you look at Hillel and Shammai that they looked at the very same passage in the Old Testament. And their arguments would hinge on one word in Deuteronomy 24, verse 1. And that word is uncleanness. Now, you may be like I am. And maybe it's been a day or two since you read Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. Let's take the time to read it. It will take only a moment. But this is the passage that they debated. And it goes to show you how preachers can interpret passages and have complete followings based on their interpretations. How some can interpret it properly and some can misinterpret it and mislead a number of people. When we talk about these rabbinical schools, Hillel and Shammai. Hillel might represent one university and Shammai might represent another, and you see how those battle lines are drawn even in the brotherhood today. Hillel might represent one way a congregation looks at MDR and Shammai might represent the way another congregation. Why can't we just look at it the same? Why can't we not read the Bible and not be conservative or liberal or just be Christians? Why can't we do that? Well, that's because there are men who impose their interpretations on a passage. Deuteronomy 24 says simply this: when a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house. When she has departed from his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her as his wife, then her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. First of all, let me point out, this passage is not saying you can divorce your wife for any reason and marry another. Now, that's the way many of the Jews in Jesus' day interpreted this passage. That's the way a lot of people look at it now. And a lot of people refer back to this and say, well, there you go. You can do it. But this is not giving men a permission to divorce their wife for any reason and marry someone else. The reason is very specific. The reason is uncleanness. Now, what does that word mean? In the New American Standard Version, it's some indecency. The Hebrew word, and this is why the New American Standard Version follows that line of reasoning, the Hebrew word says the nakedness of a thing. The nakedness of a thing. And so what we're talking about here is some inappropriate, immodest, or shameful behavior. Now, could that include adultery? Well, the penalty for adultery was to be stoned. Deuteronomy 22, 22. That was an option. But is this possibly an option? Maybe. But you didn't have to do either one. Joseph is a classic example of that. Joseph in the New Testament. Joseph and Mary in Matthew chapter 1, verse 19. You'll remember that Joseph, when he found out that Mary was with child, he understood about babies. And so apparently she's been unfaithful. She hasn't been, of course, but he sees it that way. And he could have had her stoned if he wanted to. It's a betrothal, but it was just as binding as a marriage. He had every legal right to do that. He didn't do it. He had every legal right to give her a certificate of divorce. He didn't do that either. What the Bible says is he put her away privately, quietly. What does that mean? Well, many believe and think that means he didn't bring any charges against her. And if you don't bring any charges against her, and you just walk away from it, which he could, you had the right to do that too. And so there are options that are here, and this is one that the law of Moses permitted. Jesus said, Moses wrote this because of the hardness of men's hearts. That's in Matthew 19, verse 8. He gives one definition for uncleanness, and that's marital unfaithfulness. And so when you think about this certificate of divorce for some indecency on the part of his wife, you realize it's not for just any reason. But understand this too about this certificate of divorce. It was something that was legally transacted. It was something that was publicly displayed, or we would say issued, or paper served. Sometimes that language is used too. And this meant that a man couldn't just wake up one morning and his wife burnt the toast and he just kicks her out and he then has that kind of authority and he just up and divorces her. You can't do that. This is something that has to be done legally, and there has to be a reason. And that reason specified here is uncleanness. And what's more, he couldn't remarry her. And so he needed to think before he divorced her to begin with. Because if he changed his mind, if he regretted his choices and wanted her back, he couldn't get her back. Kind of like Xerxes in the book of Esther, who dismissed Vashti and then regretted it and wanted Vashti back, but couldn't get her back. So this man needs to think before he acts. Because if he presents her with this certificate of divorce, he cannot remarry her. Now, that's not the way it is in the New Testament. And it is possible for that reconciliation to occur. And that's the one marriage God acknowledges. But in the Old Testament, it's a little bit different, and there's teeth there, so you need to be sure. They're trying to put Jesus in the middle of all of this. Okay? Which preacher will Jesus come down with? Which preacher will he side with? And what is his interpretation of the scripture? Well, he gives it for us as this passage unfolds. But Hillel and Shammai debated this. Can a man divorce his wife for any reason and marry another? Based on this one passage and based on one verse and one word in that verse, the word uncleanness. Again, think about the way Jesus interpreted Deuteronomy 24. That's the one that counts. Secondly, think with me about the world of Adam and Eve, the culture, if you will, of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. When they put Jesus in the midst of this debate between these rabbis, what does Jesus say in verse 4? And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them, what? At the beginning, made them male and female, and said, for this reason shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Please note this. Jesus didn't come down with any preacher of his day. He sided with his father, and he went back to the beginning. So in the days of Adam and Eve, God gave his law in Genesis 2, verse 24. Jesus quotes it nearly verbatim. For this reason shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Or, as one college student put it, you leave, you cleave, and you weave. Two into one. But God's design for marriage from the very beginning, one man for one woman for life. And Jesus did not move away from that ever in his ministry, and certainly not here when he was on trial before the religious leaders of his day. He didn't back down. He didn't side with Hillel. He didn't side with Shammai. He sided with God, his Father. And Jesus was amazed at their illiteracy, spiritually speaking. They didn't know their Bibles. They didn't even know the beginning of it all, creation, and how God had created marriage. They had fallen so far. They had so changed right and wrong over time, and with each culture, like a ping pong game, they didn't even realize what a marriage constituted. Can you remember several years ago, our president, President Bush, got on national television and defined a marriage for the American people. Remember? It's between one man and one woman for life. It's not between a man and another man or a woman and another woman. It's between a man and a woman for life. He felt the need to do that. That's fundamental, isn't it? Isn't that intrinsically right? Right and wrong don't change. They hadn't changed. And may I suggest to you, this is the patriarchal age. Adam and Eve, the birth of the patriarchal age that would run through Joseph prior to the law of Moses. But this was God's law then. Well, if you fast forward to the days of Jesus in the first century, what was God's law? Was it not the same? Is that not what Jesus said? Did Jesus not tell us right and wrong don't change over time, nor will right and wrong change with the changing of culture? Well, what about the days of Moses? What about the culture of Moses? You see, Moses was their big gun. They had brought up this rabbinical debate, and I think Jesus set them back when he literally went back to the beginning. So they retort in verse 7, then said to him, the Pharisees said to him, why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? Underscore the word command. That's what they said. Jesus corrected them because they were theologically wrong, biblically, scripturally wrong. He said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning, it was not so. What from the beginning was not so? That a man could divorce his wife for any reason and marry another? That's the question that's on the table. But to answer it, even through the Mosaic age, it was true what God had said from the very beginning, that a man and a woman were to be married for life. One man for one woman for life. And so, Jesus, in correcting them, tried to reason with them if he could. And when we try to wrap our minds around this conversation, and they use the word command, and Jesus uses the word permit, an illustration might help. From Matthew 3, verse 15, when John was asked to baptize Jesus, and he couldn't understand it, and it was Jesus who said, "Thus it behooves us, or it is permitted to be so, to fulfill all righteousness." So it behooves us to fulfill all righteousness. In other words, to do what's right. But the idea, it is what God is permitting now with John and Jesus. And this idea of this certificate of divorce that occurred during the days of Moses was something that God did not command, but permitted. And he permitted because of the hardness of men's hearts. Think about this. Women could not divorce their husbands. If you read the old law, a husband could divorce his wife, but not the other way around. In Mark 10, in the companion or parallel passage to this one, it is possible under Roman law for a woman to divorce her husband, but not under Jewish law. Only a husband could divorce his wife. Can you say abuse? Can you say taking advantage of that situation? And can you think of looking at women as a little bit nothing more than an object? And when they were done with them, they just discarded them and would get another. And the reason that God said you cannot remarry her is that Jesus, or God in the Old Testament, did not want disposable marriages like we have today. Disposable marriages, like a disposable razor or a disposable diaper. You get tired with it, you're done with it, just throw it away, get you another one. God did not want that. He claimed that was an abomination on the land. And that caused great sin in his eyes. So it's permitted so in the baptism of Jesus. That's the language that's used by God Almighty. It was permitted, but it was not commanded. And that would end, of course, with the end of the law of Moses. And so you have in the patriarchal age with Adam and Eve, Jesus going back to the beginning. Now you have in the Mosaic dispensation, again, you have the words from the beginning. Jesus goes back to the beginning and tells us what right and wrong look like. They don't change over time. They don't change with culture. One man marries one woman. One woman marries one man. It's for life. That's the law. That's right and wrong. And Jesus does not vary from that at all. I've often heard it said, maybe you have too, that when you deal with Matthew 19 or you deal with Deuteronomy 24, really any passage, some people have said to me, "Well, Matthew 19, I understand that, David. I understand what you're saying, but that was written to the Jews. That wasn't written to us." Okay, let me ask you something. How many Jews were present in the Garden of Eden? How many Jews were there in the beginning when God laid down his law for marriage? And I've heard people say, "Well, David, that's a good passage, and I understand what you're saying, but that was written to Christians. That's not written to us," as if to justify divorce and remarriage. Let me ask you something. How many Christians were there in the beginning, in the Garden of Eden, when God united Adam and Eve, when he literally walked Eve down the aisle and presented her to Adam? You see, right and wrong don't change over time. And right and wrong don't change with culture, no matter how we might try to justify it. And then finally, there is the law of Jesus today. The Christian age, if you will. And Jesus makes it very clear, doesn't he? In verse 9, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality," that's the language our Lord used, "and not uncleanness, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." And so when Jesus says, "But I say unto you," that ends all discussion. Earlier in Matthew 5, 27 and 28, you'll remember Jesus said, "You have heard that it has been said of old, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looks upon his wife to lust, or looks upon a woman to lust after her, hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." So they may be saying one thing, they may be teaching one thing, they may be interpreting the scripture in one way, but Jesus said, "But I say to you," in other words, he was God in the flesh, he was the Son of God, he did have the right interpretation of the scriptures, he wrote the scriptures. So yes, he does. But when he says this, that puts an end to any discussion between Hillel and Shammai. That puts an end to any reference to the patriarchal age or the Mosaic law. Now we're under the law of Christ, Galatians 6, verse 2. And here it is, spelled out for us so very clearly. But it's not different. It's not different at all from the very beginning, where a man is to leave his father and his mother and is to be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Right and wrong don't change over time, and they don't change, and it doesn't change with culture. Do you think the disciples got it? Do you think they understood what Jesus was saying? They did. Look again at how they responded. His disciples said to him, "If such is the case of the man with his wife, it is better not to marry." That's right. But they live in a time where marriages didn't last. Divorces occurred regularly, and remarriages were just one after another in people's lives. And Jesus said, "It's got to end. That's not the way my Father originally created it. Because of the hardness of men's hearts, my Father permitted that certificate of divorce, but not for any reason. It had to be specifically for uncleanness." And so right and wrong have never changed. And the thing that we understand about marriage, and maybe it's hinted at here by the apostles, we better be right when we marry. We better choose wisely. We better pray about it, think about it, and understand it is a lifetime commitment. Right and wrong don't change over time, nor do they change with culture. Our world wants to believe they do, but God says they don't. Now, what do we do with this lesson? In 1996 in Nashville, Tennessee, there was a meeting that occurred of the National Baseball Coaches Association. There were about 4,000 to 5,000 people who were there. Coaches, little league coaches, high school coaches, college coaches, pro coaches. There were a number of great speakers that were there, but there was one speaker everyone really wanted to hear, John Skilonis. Skilonis had coached for over 40 years at Pepperdine University. He had retired since. He was 78 years old when he spoke that day in 1996. And as he walked to the podium and walked up on the stage, he did so to a rousing ovation. Everyone wanted to hear what he had to say. But as he shuffled his way across the stage, he had a rope tied around his neck, and he had a home plate, a regulation-size home plate, hanging around his neck. I mean, just as white as it could be, and it looked so strange. And people thought he's lost his mind. And other people thought, well, what in the world is he going to do with that? He stood up and he asked his audience, "Little League coaches, how wide is home plate?" No one said anything for a moment. Finally, someone said, 17 inches. And he said, "That's right, it's 17 inches. He looked at his high school coaches and asked them, "How wide is home plate?" 17 inches. College coaches, "How wide is home plate?" 17 inches. Major league coaches, "How wide is home plate?" 17 inches. And then he barked out and said, "What do you do with a pitcher in the major leagues who can't throw the baseball over a 17-inch home plate? You send him back to the minors. What you don't say is, well, if you can't throw it over 17 inches, we'll just make it 18 inches or 19 inches, maybe even better, 20 inches. Do you think you could throw it over that?" You don't change the standard. And then he said to his coaches, particularly his high school coaches, let's say your best player is late for practice. Let's say that the night before he was out drinking. The next day, will you let him play? Or will you bench him? Will you widen the plate for him? Will you hold him accountable? And then he took home plate and he turned it around. He took out a Sharpie and he drew a house complete with a door and windows. He turned it back around toward his audience. He said, this is what's wrong with our homes. We're not holding our children accountable. When they do what is wrong, we don't hold them accountable. And when they break the rules, we don't hold them accountable. What we have done is we've widened the plate. That's what's wrong with our homes. And then he turned it around and he put a flag on top of that house. And he turned it back around and he said, this is what's wrong with our country. There are those who are changing our Constitution routinely. We're not holding them accountable. We're letting them do it. And we're not saying anything. We're not doing anything. We're widening the plate. Turned it around, replaced the flag with a cross, and he said, this is what's wrong with our churches. We're not holding people accountable to God's law, to God's book. We're just simply letting them get away with this and get away with that. Right and wrong don't seem to matter anymore. We have simply widened the plate. Please, he said, don't widen the plate. And then he turned that home plate around, and on the other side of the home plate, it's not white, but it's totally dark. And he said, if we continue to widen the plate in this country, this is what's ahead of us. Darkness. Was he right? So 1996. How much have we widened the plate since? Jesus will never widen the plate. Never. He never has. He never will. The standard was set in the beginning, and the standard has survived every age. Patriarchal, Mosaic, into the Christian age. And God won't widen the plate when it comes to the day of judgment. And we haven't obeyed the gospel or we haven't lived faithfully to Jesus and his church. He will not make an exception for me or you. He will not widen the plate. So don't widen the plate today. We know the standard. We know what's right. We know what's wrong. That hasn't changed. It never will. Why not today? Instead of widening the plate, just do what's right and obey the gospel. And if we can help you in any way, please come while together we stand and sing.